everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 117. It's a show about Linux. We bring Linux news, tips, anything from the software to hardware, just general awesome Linux news, anything we deem necessary to bring to the listeners and viewers. We thank you very much for being here. I am one of the co-hosts, Cody Cooper, and also with me this week, as always, the maven, Stephen McLaughlin, a.k.a. Door-to-Door Geek. How's it going this week, Door?
Hello, Cody. Going good. It still feels like it's last week for some reason. It feels like the weekend didn't really happen, and it's just a continuation of last week for me. I've been busy, but not really stressed busy.
You couldn't have summed it up better. I feel like it's just been one long week. I really did. You and I haven't talked for over 10 days, and I didn't really realize until about an hour ago, and then I saw your Vox message. I was like, oh, yeah, he's still alive.
Yeah. Well, and something tells me I'm going to have this feeling continue on until, like, January 3rd or 4th.
Yeah, it's just that time of year, man.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I'm glad to hear you've been doing good. I'm getting over a slight illness, but it's on the downhill slope. I just curled in bed and watched Star Trek Generations, and my fever broke, and I was fine.
Very cool.
I would like to really quickly thank Tracy Holtz for coming on last week. You did a fantastic job. You got some really good feedback. Thank him. If you guys haven't listened to that episode yet, we talked about Magia, however you want to say it, the Linux distro. Very, very good. Thank you, Tracy, for coming out.
Yeah, I got to say, here's the best thing about Tracy. He's Tracy, okay? No fluff, no bull, no BS, no swerves. You know when he's kidding around because he immediately laughs after it. He shot very straight from the hip about that distro. I will say that distro has a use, and what it does fantastic. It's just a lot of the smaller distros have a hard time being complete. That's why they're smaller distros. Mm-hmm. So when I installed it, to me, it was maybe the best installer I think I've seen.
Oh, definitely.
Bar none.
Yeah.
And using it, it was very solid. It just wasn't complete. There were certain applications, like you said, I had a hard time getting on it. But if I could have worked around those applications, I don't see how I would have had a bad experience.
Yeah, definitely had a good experience in it. But it was a bit limiting, being the fact that I didn't have enough time to really delve into it too much. But it'll happen.
Gotcha.
Very cool. So right off the bat, of course, heading into Christmas, we're doing shopping for ourselves, for loved ones. Please, if you're planning on doing any shopping on Amazon, please use the podnuts.com/Amazon link. It still takes you directly to Amazon. However, Podnuts will get a small commission from the sale. So not only are you getting the item you were going to buy anyway, but you're also helping out the network. We'd really appreciate it. Personally, what I did was I made a little icon link in my Google Chrome, but right below the address bar. I have links for all the websites I hit daily, and I just made one to go straight to there. That way I don't have to type in the URL. I just click on that, goes right to podnuts.com/Amazon, then Amazon. So give that a try. If you feel it's a little cumbersome, it'll help us out. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good point. With that, I'll say I had a guy, Chris S. If you're thinking, don't think. It's not this guy. But he did reference Jupiter Broadcasting, the network of podcasts, and he sent me two links. A guy went and made Chrome and Firefox extensions that automate the usage of Amazon. So if you have this add-on in your browser, every time you go to Amazon, it will automatically use the Jupiter Broadcasting affiliate link to where you don't pay any more money and they get a cut. And the guy put it up on GitHub, okay, which means anybody can download it, anybody can modify it, and anybody can redistribute it. Okay, I have not had a chance to look at it, but if anyone out there wants to help with this, I say let's gather, communicate, make sure people aren't doing double work, and see if we can get this done, because I would love to tell Steve, hey Steve, put these two links and put these files on podnos.com. And then it's all good. We can just tell people to get these links and we don't have to say, remember to go, remember to go, remember to go. I'd much rather say, go get the add-on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything we can do to make it easier, we will. So yeah, if you guys want to help us out and look into that, we will gladly appreciate it.
Did I lose Cody? Did you guys lose me? Oh.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I don't know if I lost you for a second or you lost me for a second.
Oh, no, you were going the whole time. I mean, I didn't touch anything. I don't know what happened.
Maybe Google wants a Google affiliate link.
Maybe. Well, actually, you mentioned Firefox. So.
Ah, shame on me.
Might have been it. Then again, so did I. And I don't know.
They'll get over it. They're billionaires.
They will. Cool. So what do we got going this week, Dor?
We actually have a lot of stuff. And the first thing, the basic is going to tie in with the very first topic. Okay. I've talked a lot about patience here lately. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's because I really do feel like patience is truly a virtue. To exhibit patience is needed to be a computer user that doesn't always fight with his computer. Okay. I'll say the same kind of thing applies with the evolution of software. I know that's a little bit of a stretch there, but you got to think about it this way. We have been trained, we as in I say everybody like over the age of 30 at least, has been trained. We have no direct feedback or impact to any of the software we use. We get what we get and that's it. It's like old style television. It's a very laid back experience. Once you get it, there is no forward interaction with the developers on what this software does, how it acts, what it can do in the future. But with free software, free GPL software, we do have the ability to make an impact. And what I don't want people to think, what I mean by that is, well, you have the ability to go learn how to code, then submit patches and do Git submits. And no, that's not what I mean at all, actually. I don't want to be mean when I say this, but that is actually a small part of a growing project. A small part of a growing project is the actual code submissions to the project. A lot of it is just raising awareness of said product, talking, communicating with other people about features and things that can happen in the future with this software, giving the developer better ideas of what groups of people like or would like to see. That's very important when it comes to free software. If I just make software, push it out of the door, and I never hear back from anyone ever again, A, I'm going to think nobody likes the software. B, if I continue the software, I'm going to keep pushing out my views of what it should be. And they might not be what the masses of people want. So I cannot encourage people enough. Do not forget, this is not just a download and then cut off all ties with the developer and with the community behind this software. If there is a piece of software that you like and it doesn't do everything you need, and you don't stop and try to communicate with that developer, I hate to say it like this, but shame on you. You're doing a disservice to that developer. I don't want to say they expect feedback. They crave, they desire, they lust after feedback. Even if it might not agree with them, they want to hear it. They want to know what other people think about it and how to use it better. And the best example I have of that, it's a big project, so it's much harder to be impactful with it. But this was a very long running project that had a lot of input from major companies, okay? But it's Samba 4, okay? Right now in virtually every distro, if you install Windows File Sharing or Samba on your Linux distro, odds are you're going to get Samba 3. And what we know of Samba in Samba 3 is basically just the ability to create users, give those user accounts access to share drives, and then it's accessible over the network via this Samba protocol.
Okay.
I cannot tell people enough. Samba 4 is evolutionary. This is not revolutionary. In fact, this is not like evolutionary. This is evolutionary times four. Okay. This really takes the idea of a piece of software evolving, and it makes it explode onto itself exponentially, dare I say. Okay. Now, with all that said, I'll admit I don't fully comprehend all of the impacts by all of these changes. I'm not a network admin. Okay. If you really want to know and understand all of these changes right now, I really encourage you to contact somebody like, I'd say, Link Pheasant, who his 9-to-5 job is this type of work. There's a couple other people out there who do this kind of thing. Tracy Holtz can understand it, I'd say. The Knucklehead Tech has an understanding of this. I don't. But what I can tell people is, for years, and Chad Wallenberg from Linux Basement, really smart admin guy and quite animated and quite musical, where I miss hearing his songs, but that's a different story. Okay. He gave me an hour and a half lecture once. This was like a year and a half ago. Of why everything bigger than a small office with five people in it has to have a Windows server in it. And this was a Linux lover. You know, this guy really does love Linux. Sure, he owned an iPad, whatever. He loved Linux. And he went on a tirade explaining to me the inadequacies with Linux network administration. And it wasn't really network administration that was the issue. It was policy setting, policy distribution to the computers and to the users, and it was the ability to simple, in a more simple way, admin the whole high bunch of knots when it came to networking, server administration kind of thing. Okay, now we're at Samba 4. Okay, if Chad was talking to me today, I think he would say something different, not completely different, because this is not really, you know, 2 years old, proven technology, a whole bunch of different options on how to do it, but it's the beginning. Okay. Okay. Basically, in the past, Samba only gave people the network administration capabilities that existed back in like the days of Windows NT. That was one of the things I was told. And that, in technology terms, was 40 years ago. I mean, it was forever ago.
Yeah.
You know, there is a good handful of people right now in the business who say, NT what? I never used NT. I started with XP. You know what I mean? It was so old ago.
Yeah.
Okay. When you install, and this I might get wrong, okay? When you install a Windows server on a network, you typically make it an active directory domain controller. What this is a central hub of rights and processes over the network. Through this hub, you can set forth what's called group policies, to where I can say anyone in this group will automatically have access to this server. Or, and it also holds a centralized password management. So Cody Cooper's account only has to be reset once on this server, then he can log in anywhere on the network with this new password. It also does a lot of like groups, does print sharing kind of things. It does more that I'm not going to really say I completely understand. Okay, but now Samba 4 has the ability to be installed on a network, act as a domain controller, and even it does it so good that the Windows MMC, I believe it's called, the Windows add-on or snap-in called Active Directory Computer and Users module can connect to a Samba 4 server, and you can admin it just like a Windows domain controller. Okay. If people out there didn't know, Microsoft kiboshed or announced the kiboshing of Microsoft Small Business Server, SBS, which was very heavily used in small businesses below 50 people, I think primarily was its real target. And from what I know, from hearing from multiple people, it worked pretty well in that little environment. It worked good. Well, they killed it. They literally want every customer and every business to pay multiple thousands of dollars in licensing fees. And then there's a fee basically for every person you intend on connecting to that server. You have to pay a fee. Can't remember what that fee's called, but they have that as well. So now, in the coming months, in the coming year, Samba 4 and the tools that go along with Samba 4 are going to get more polished. It's going to bring true network gang wars, dare I say. This is like turf wars, okay? Samba 4 now is going to be a true competitor to Microsoft domain controllers on small businesses, local area networks, and dare I say, if not now, pretty soon, on the enterprise level as well. You know, and I hate saying game changer, but I think this is the bat has been swung, the ball has been contacted, and right now we're waiting to see how far that ball can go. But I'm pretty sure it's out of the park.
Well, it will be cool to have, I mean, just one more barrier, one more thing to say, well, we can't really do this on Linux, to have one more of those knocked down. So it sounds like Samba 4 is really going to let administrators make their jobs easier within this environment rather than relying on Microsoft's tools. I mean, breaking it down, would you agree? Is that what I'm getting here?
Yeah, and I'm going to quote Matt Enders from Sunday Morning Linux Review, their most recent cast. Anybody who likes this, you better thank the EU. Because the EU basically forced Microsoft to publicize, I don't want to say the inner workings of all this, but a lot of the API, a lot of the connections that went on. So the Samba developers were able to look at that and reverse engineer what was left into where this Samba 4 over the network is so utterly close to looking like a real Windows domain controller. A lot of the tools, a lot of the applications will not be able to tell the difference.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, yeah, and the EU, I think, was also, if I'm not mistaken, they were one of the the organization that has taken on Microsoft in this past as far as being a monopoly. I think, weren't they the one that dictated they couldn't automatically insert Internet Explorer as a default browser in Windows Vista? I believe that's what they did. You know, I might be wrong, but
no, that's right. The European Commission, the EU, made them do certain things. They made them, I believe, unbundle Movie Maker, Media Player, a couple of the tools, which is why now when you get a fresh Windows install, you have to go install more things to get what you had in XP,
Got it.
Kind of thing. And they forced them to prompt upon first boot on a computer in the EU, what do you want your default browser to be?
Yep.
On top of that, back in 2004 was when Microsoft lost in an antitrust ruling about Active Directory, Samba stuff.
Yeah, so we have to thank the European Union for quite a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, people can talk bad about them all they want. I feel like this. Again, I've said this a couple times. There is no such thing as anything being completely black or completely white. There is no completely good. There is no completely bad. Our lives is filled with shades of gray. So, you know, the EU might do things that people think is stupid or not good for humanity or whatever. They don't. And if those people out there, I say to you, well, they don't do all bad. Okay. They don't do all bad because this right here is huge for free software and for third world countries who shouldn't have to have pirated servers just to try to get their stuff up and running. Yeah.
No, I agree.
Yeah. And I will say, I'm going to try to get somebody on here probably after the first of the year. Because me and Cody are right now T-minus 3 days from December 21st, 2012. So if in fact we exist in 4 days after the first of the year, I think I'm going to try to get someone on who really, as a 9-to-5, does this kind of work and can really understand the benefits of it and, you know, and hopefully test with it, play with it, and tell me what they think of it.
No, yeah, I would love to have someone come on in who uses it day to day and is able to speak to the benefits of it, not just from an informational standpoint, but from I'm using this and here's how it's benefiting me and my business and how it can benefit you.
Right. Okay, this next one, Cody. I'm really unsure how to jump off with this one, so I'm just going to say it. There's a new distribution I never heard of. It's called Zeven OS. Z-E-V-E-N-O-F. Okay. If you watch the video in the link to PC World, it shows a quick run through of this Linux distribution. Okay. Its interface is very, very, very BOS. And for those of you that don't know what I mean when I say BOS, I'll say it looks a little bit not modern, is the nicest way I can put it. It's not bad. Let me tell you something right now. If anyone thinks lighter, quicker desktops don't have their place, I will say you are a fool. They have a place. It just might not be on your desktop. Okay. Mm-hmm. But this distribution is geared to be very light, hence the BOS style interface, but it's also geared to be a multimedia rich experience. What I mean by that is, okay, you have a pipe in your computer. That is your processor and your RAM and your video processing and everything, okay? Only so much can fit down that pipe at one point in time. Why have background processes and your desktop taking up space in that pipe? If you limit that stuff, you then get more room in that pipe for your multimedia experience, whether it be gaming, watching videos, making videos, that kind of thing. Sorry. So, quite literally, you get a better experience as a producer, publisher, creator with a lighter desktop. That's why I'm bringing up this distribution, because that's what they scream that this is their focus. And I just thought it was cool. I just wanted to mention it. I didn't even load it in a VM because I literally found it not too long ago. But I'll say one of the things that I truly love about this, and not too many desktops do this anymore, you basically have the ability to drag and drop any window inside of any other window. Okay. So we know how, like, in the top of Chrome or Firefox, we have tabs for different pages.
Yeah.
You can have tabs in the top of a window. One tab can be Chrome. One tab can be Firefox. One tab can be Audacity. And the next tab can be your file manager.
That sounds dangerous.
It's dangerous, but it can be insanely efficient in workflows. I will say that, because I did have a desktop. I honestly want to say it was OpenBox in the past that I used to use that had that. And I did find it really helpful. Let me see on this. It's based on Ubuntu 12.10. So you have a lot of software possibilities there. That's one of the best things I'll say. And you should have a lot of hardware support as well.
I love to see these very specific distributions heading toward different projects, whether it just be, you know, gaming, audio, video. But this is a multimedia distro, which is near and dear to my heart, because I switched from Windows to Mac mainly because of the multimedia tools years ago, and that's just what they were using at the college I went to. But to have, if someone is geared toward multimedia, this is just another distro you can suggest to them. It's not going to have all the glitz and the glamour of maybe the current Ubuntu distro, but ultimately you don't need that to get your work done. So to see something like this on the market, just another little thing in your back pocket to pull out to, for that one person that says, well, I need to do these things. Well, try this first. Very cool.
Absolutely. Some of the multimedia software that comes included by default are OpenShot 1.4.3, which has direct in the application the ability to upload videos to YouTube. That could be really useful for somebody out there. They have Audacity 2.0, Pulse Audio, Inkscape, GIMP, MPlayer 2, and things as new. See, all this is new software. Typically, when you get something with a super light, older-style desktop like this, you don't get the newest software. Mm-hmm. It does look like they're trying to keep up with a lot of the newer software. And, like, here's the perfect example. Those are, what I said before, are very feature-rich multimedia creation applications, okay? Then, for your word processor, you have Abbey Word, a very light, yet pretty full-featured word processor, and Claws Mail, a super, let me say again, super alternative for someone who wants GUI email, but not heavy. I like Thunderbird, okay? I like Thunderbird a lot. Thunderbird is heavy. Claws is very light.
Very cool. I'll have to check this out.
It happened again, Cody.
Did I fall out again?
No, in the middle of the show, I get a big box signed out. You have been signed out. Here you go. You guys don't believe me? I'll show you a screenshot. This is now like the third show in a row it does this with me. You have been signed out in another tab for security reasons. You must sign in again to save changes to this document.
Weird.
Dude, I don't know what's going on, but it only happens Showtime. But it doesn't kick me out of the Google Hangout, so I guess it ain't that bad.
Well, okay, I got to say this, though. You were talking about another Mozilla product just a second ago, so... You might see random. I'm seeing a pattern.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Ready?
Okay.
I'll make it up to them. And it just so happens the next link, okay?
What a coincidence.
Actually, they might not like this either. Okay. It's the time of the year. It's the giving time of the year. And maybe you can't go to podnuts.com/Amazon and buy everything that your family needs. What if your family needs functionality, yet they will not get off of Windows?
Then you make them.
Well, I know, but you got to do it in baby steps, okay?
Yeah.
Your end goal should be to have them come to you and say, okay, I'm sick of Windows. I hear you talking about this thing. Show me what it is. I need it. You want them to have to come to you. Here's a great first step, okay? There is a website called valo-cd.net, okay? And what this is, I'll say first off, I hate the article title. Valo-cd serves a smorgasbord of open source Windows apps. They're GPL-free software, what they are. I'm getting more of a stickler about that, okay? Open source is an idea. It's like saying a fast sports car. It doesn't actually describe the sports car in any shape, way, or form, okay? It's just explaining to you like one description of it.
Mm-hmm.
When you say free software or GPL software, now you're saying facts about that car.
Right.
That is a car that can go 220 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. That is a car with a V10. So I don't like them just saying open source applications, but I'm going to stop talking about that right now. Okay. It's loaded with a bunch of Windows-based free software that you can give to them. To me, this is the perfect baby step for someone. Instead of handing them a pirated copy of the new horrible Total Recall movie, you can hand them a CD of completely free software with a, I'm going to guess, liberal estimate of $2,325 worth of software on it.
That would be a nice Christmas gift.
Yep. And that is just a Valo CD, valo-cd.net. In fact, I'm just reading the PC World article. So let me just verify. Valo, valo-cd.net. Yes.
Yep. And I do.
And
I,
it has.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. Oh, I was going to say, I like this specifically because, yeah, you might have that person who's just a Windows diehard or who has just used Windows for so long, they feel uncomfortable to kind of step out of the comfort zone, you know, and then they start hearing about open source software. They don't understand what it is or if it's reliable or if it'll meet their needs or what's available. This is something you can hand them and say, well, here are a bunch of the applications. Give them a try if you like them. Let me know if you're interested and we can talk about some other alternatives. That way you don't have to be on this platform if you're really sick of viruses or for whatever reason, so on and so forth. So yeah, it's another angle to potentially come at them to get them to switch distributions if in fact that's going to suit their needs. So I really dig this.
Right. And I'll say it's Finnish. The Finnish make good stuff. I had to say it. Because that's where it comes from. But I mean, some of the applications on there, and I'm going to say, of course, because most people are going to figure this kind of stuff's going to be on there. LibreOffice, Firefox, GIMP, Scribus, which I keep hearing fantastic things about.
It is. It's great.
VLC, Pigeon. I'm kind of a fan of Pigeon. DIA. Stellarium, TuxPaint, Views, WinSCP, WinSCP for the win. That's really powerful software there. And so forth and so forth and so on. I mean, just flat out good stuff.
Very cool.
So you've used Scribus in the past?
Yeah, I've used Scribus before. Basically, think of it as an alternative to like... oh my God, I can't remember what they call it. It used to be Adobe PageMaker, but now it's basically like a desktop publishing software. Like if you needed to create like a poster, I used to use it for creating posters for my comedy shows and then creating marketing material for some other projects I was doing. So yeah, it's great. It's full featured and it's laid out in such a way where just like any other good piece of software that has a lot of capabilities, it's easy to learn off the bat. And then you can sort of dig a little bit deeper and learn even more cool things, but it's not so overwhelming. Like some of these media applications you boot it up and there's just like, wow, I'm scared. There's so many options, but very, very cool. If you need to make any sort of print material, whether it be like a brochure or if you need to create like a poster for like a gathering for work or for a garage sale poster or something like that, that's a fantastic program. Very full featured. Check it out. That's Scribus, Scribus.
Very cool. I would honestly like to say I see a time when I would need that because, I mean, you made it sound good, but I don't have the need for it. I'm going to have to try to see if I can find the need for it. Oh, the wife would. That's who it is. She likes making invitations for people.
Well, and then people make their own custom templates and have them online, so like you can use it to make business cards or greeting cards. I mean, and then what's nice is, you know, that you can alter the templates to suit your own needs. Yeah, it's a fantastic program, and it once again it fills that need for someone who's potentially using the contrary Adobe product. I can't remember what they name it now. I just can't. I'm sorry. Or InDesign. That's what it is. Adobe InDesign. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I purposely don't know that stuff because it costs thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Okay, this next one, I gotta say, this is one I haven't tried only because I don't think it will fit my family's need. But I think I should. I think I need to stop pretending and just load it. And I'll tell you guys what I'm going to load it on. Okay, this is at Lil... I can't even say it right. LilPutin.com. LilPutin.com.
LilyPutin.
LilyPutin. There you go.
Yep.
LilyPutin. I just think you got to say it like you're saying something's really cute. Oh, well, LilyPutin.
Yeah. You know. Think of it as Lilliput, like from Gulliver's Travels, but then computing. So LilyPutin.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, there's an article there, and it's about XBMC 12 Beta 2. Okay, everybody out there should know what XBMC is. XBMC used to be Xbox Media Center. Back before the Xbox 360, people figured out ways to hack their old Xboxes and turn it into a multimedia streaming computer. Xbox 360 came out, and they couldn't do it anymore, so they decided to change it over, make it free software, and now I believe you can actually run the interfaces on Windows, Linux, and Mac. But here's the kicker, okay? XBMC 12 Beta 2 by default supports the Raspberry Pi hardware. So you can load it on a Raspberry Pi with no extra fidgeting, no extra work. It's a beta, so it might not be solid, but it is a great start, I'll say.
And I gotta tell you, as a cord cutter myself, I no longer pay for cable. If you guys have been looking about implementing something like this in your home, whether installing this on a device of your own or getting a device like the Roku or like streaming Hulu and Netflix through the Xbox 360 or through the PlayStation 3 or the Wii, this interface is very beautiful. It's very slick. I've seen videos of some older ones in action, and it's great. And I just haven't installed it because I just haven't had the time. But looking at this new version, especially geared right toward the Raspberry Pi and another device, which I'm sure you're going to mention here in a minute. If you guys are looking for that device and looking for a software that's going to be easily digestible and accepted by possibly your loved one, door calls it spousal approval, this should be right up their alley because it looks like it's easily navigatable and it's just a slick interface. So give it a try.
Did you say navigatable?
Did I say navigatable? I blame you. I blame you because your doorisms are contagious.
That's great. Yeah, I got to say, of all the good things people can say about it, the only thing people need to know is this interface is polished skillfully. I mean, if there's any spouse that looks at this and says, ew, like, ugh, you're such a dork, ugh, you know, because it looks complicated, then dude, you're not, you know, I don't know, but something's wrong. Okay. This interface looks unbelievably good.
It really does. And I'll tell you what I'll do after the show. I'm going to take a photo and post it on Google Plus. In my living room, I have a large wall that holds all my entire DVD collection, which is probably 4 or 5 12-foot long shelves. It's huge. Mm. And to think that I could throw all of those onto a hard drive and then have it on one of these devices and then just like put it in our bedroom or have it in our main screen in the living room, I could have that wall back. I could take the wall back. I could do it and not rely on optical media devices. And you can too. So check this out. XBMC, is it version 12 beta 2?
Yeah.
Yep. There we go. Very cool.
Yeah. And I will say there's nothing wrong with optical media, but everybody has to know sooner or later it's going to fail on you.
Yep. Some of my laser discs don't play anymore, man. Disc rot.
The biggies.
It's happening.
Yeah. Not good.
Mm-mm.
Okay, I'm going to talk about this next one really quick, but it comes with a disclaimer. And the disclaimer is, I'm not a gamer.
Okay, I'm sorry, I got to ask you real quick, though. What are you planning on installing the XBMC on?
I'm going to probably put it on a Pi.
Okay.
Just because I bought, I believe it's Bluetooth. Now I'm not sure. wireless keyboard. It's really not a wireless keyboard. It's a remote control.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the old boxy box, but the new boxy box style, it's a remote. And then you flip it over, pivot it 90 degrees, and it has a QWERTY keyboard on it.
Very cool.
And it was only like $30-something, and I just literally got it today. It's charging now. It's built good. I mean, I really like the feel of this thing. So far, I haven't turned it on, but I'm really happy with it.
Very cool.
So I'm gonna probably try to put it on the Pi. The only question is, where am I going to physically connect it up to? Because I can't go to the big TV, because if it's not polished and ready for prime time to where I can explain it to her in a timely fashion, then it's going to be a complete failure.
Right. Well, I was reading the article, and you can also use it on the MK802 through Android, which I thought that's what you were going to say. So if you guys have an MK802, I mean, the Raspberry Pi might suit you, but needs better. But if you already have the MK802, give it a try. Let us know your experience with it. Yeah, see? Yeah.
Okay. It's going to be a question of, because that, I'll say, that Android on there is a touch slow.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to see the performance on it. Because if the performance is decent, it doesn't even have to be great. Decent, that's all that she cares about. Because all she really does is just load up her Netflix or one type of thing. And that's all she does for the whole night.
Oh, there you go.
So it doesn't need to be crazy feature rich. It doesn't have to snap around all kinds of screens. It just has to be solid.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you for indulging me. So you were saying you're not a gamer.
I know, but now I got to write that down, Cody. Okay. I'm not a gamer at all. I used to be very passionate about my gaming. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I literally... Cody knows this and understands this, at least I'll say. I've called out of work 2 straight days because it's something, you know, because a game came out and I wanted to pound it. I wanted to pound the living crap out of it. I wanted to own that game. I haven't done that in a while. I'm a happily married man with responsibilities and duties and obligations and, you know, so I can't do that anymore. But I do enjoy listening to Linux Gamecast over at LinuxGamecast.com with Ven Stone. It's not completely family friendly. That's your disclaimer. But I like listening to it. He seems, honestly, fun guy, really knows his stuff in and out. Besides doing voiceovers on some stuff, he's in the gaming space, literally. Okay, I asked him, and I encourage everybody, if you have gaming questions, go over to Linux Gamecast. They have forums. Either join the forums, shoot him an email, hit him off on Google+, hit him off on Twitter, and ask him a gaming question, because he's the guy to answer. I am just one part of a communication transport, because I end up going asking him game stuff. I don't know. Well, I had a good friend, Paul, takes all the notes for the show. All praises and due to you, Paul.
Yes, thank you,
Paul. Asked me about first-person shooters. And he wanted to make sure I understood what a first-person shooter was, because the first time I came back with a round of games, it ended up not one of them was a real first-person shooter. There was a third-person shooter. There was a first-person game, but it wasn't a shooter.
Mm.
So I'm trying to make it up to him, okay? I don't want to let Paul down. So what I discovered was this Xonic, I think it's called.
Zonotic.
There you go.
Yep.
Zonotic.org.
Xonotic.
Thank you. See, I can't even do that right. I'm reading it.
That's what I'm here for.
I know. Thank you. Now, if you go to that page, click on media, and you will see a long video. It does look like it is showing only one arena, one place of battle, if you will, but it's a long video. It's literally a 10-minute video of just this guy going through this area, and he's literally just like pounding this guy, this competitor, to the nth degree. This is first-person shooter. I will say the ultimate thing that Paul was looking for, I think this game did do, which was offline first person shooter or campaign mode, I believe it's called now. That's what he was really looking for. I don't know how much of campaign stuff this has. It gave me the impression it did, but he was looking for something on Linux, first person campaign. I'm trying to help him out. If you guys out there have any games you know of that I need to tell Paul about, don't hesitate. Door@podnuts.com.
Yeah, and if you guys haven't listened to Linux Gamecast yet, Ven and Jordan do a fantastic job of not only reviewing games, but letting you know how to get the different games to work on your hardware and doing insane tests. Go ahead.
I wasn't going to mention Jordan because he's a Canduadian.
Oh, okay. Well, the co-host should get credit too. But yeah, if you ever a bit, plus Ven's voice, man, if you haven't heard Ven Stone speak,
Ven Stone, you
need to do it.
Exactly. And it's not like he's not flexing anything. He's not using any software or hardware.
Nope.
If you need, honestly, a quality voice for something, I highly encourage you. Seriously, even if it's just,
hello, you have reached Door-to-Door Geek.
You need to contact him. If it's just even a voicemail message, throw him a couple bones and ask him to record something for you. He'll be happy to do it. I was seriously tempted to get him to do all of the intros for all of the shows.
That would be very cool. Yeah. Well, yeah, and then I am a gamer, so again, the opposite side of the coin, we're complete. Real quick, for the difference between first and third person, this is easy to remember. Okay, first person games are as if you are the main character and you are seeing the world through the eyes of the main character. Okay, so you're seeing like your hands out in front of you. Imagine you are in the helmet or the head of that person. Okay, that's first person. Third person is the camera in the game is up and behind the character where you see the entire character or a large portion of the character on the screen walking around. Okay. So imagine if it was a driving game as opposed to sitting in the cockpit, like first person mode, or I should say driver's seat, sitting in the driver's seat, first person mode, right? Looking directly out the windshield versus seeing the entire car on the screen in front of you and then navigating it. Very easy.
Yeah, I will say I've had a couple games that I'll say blur the line. I want to say there was a Mario game where it was always third person view, but then certain things would happen where it would kick it into first person view. But not too many games seem to do that, do they?
Some games. Well, the thing is that typically either you hate one or you hate the other. Right. So,
So you're saying I really made Paul mad?
No. Yeah, I heard him straining, giving you the finger. No, not at all. It's difficult if you're comfortable in one, it's difficult to transition to the other. But once you sort of master both, it's easy. But what a lot of the newer higher end action games are doing is they kind of make a hybrid. For instance, the game Gears of War. You're running around third person, but when you actually raise your weapon, it does a first third person hybrid to where it goes over the shoulder of the main character to where you're looking around as if you're in first person mode, but some of the characters still on the screen to where it's much easier to aim. Yeah. So it's a good gaming mechanic.
So like they're trying to do the best of both worlds.
Right. Yeah.
That's a challenge because either you do it or you do it horribly.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll just ask anybody if you guys know of any single player first person shooter campaign games for Linux that Paul needs to check out. Please help me out.
Well, our next topic, which I moved up in relation to this, should be helping Paul soon. Yeah.
He's in Australia.
Oh, well,
I don't know if this is a world thing.
He's got to be able to find a way, right?
I'm sure.
Just like in Jurassic Park, you know, nature always finds a way.
Exactly.
There you go, right? Okay. The Steam on Linux beta will open for everyone this weekend, just in time for Christmas. Thanks, Valve. And I haven't looked at the exact list of, or I don't even know if they've released it, of the games that are going to be available. But one of the games that I know is on the closed beta right now is Serious Sam 3, the BFE edition. So that's a good first-person shooter. Very good. It's almost like a good kind of a tongue-in-cheek. There's a lot of humor in it, but it's still graphically a very beautiful game. Lots of action, lots of big weapons. And Ven Stone on Linux Gamecast, along with Jordan's Fong, they talked about it. They did hardware tests.
And this is Jordan's favorite game, that one Serious Sam, right?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, no, he hates it with a passion.
Oh, does he? Okay.
Yeah.
But regardless of what you think about the story, graphically, it's very beautiful. So if you're thinking, who was it, Paul, that needs it? That needs one? Yeah, Paul, if you're looking for a good first-person shooter, that's a good one, especially if you want to try out the Steam on Linux beta coming this weekend. But I'm telling you, once they get it on there, you have to try Left 4 Dead, which is a zombie survival horror first-person shooter game, and it is the best in that genre. And man, it's just heart-pounding the whole time you're playing it. It's awesome. So check it out.
Yeah, everybody seems to think, or seems to all agree, I'll say, that is great gaming. And I know my one buddy, he's not really a shooter on any games. He really liked himself from Left 4 Dead. I believe it was too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both games are great. Great story, great cinematic sequences. It's not just a, hey, I'm shooting zombies. You know, there's, I mean, because, you know, you see, you know, all the zombie movies and all the zombie games released in the last few years, you know, it's kind of oversaturated, but this is, in my opinion, that experience done right. Cause you feel terrified when you play it, and you feel overwhelmed, and they did a fantastic job. So I can't wait to try it on Linux. I don't have to buy it for Windows. I don't have to, you know, rig it up and play it on my 360. I can just play it right on my Linux box. I am waiting very patiently for that day.
Yeah, I'll say now what you just said made a lot of sense, because he used to be a fan of the Resident Evil game. So I think that feeling of wanting to get scared and pop someone's head off.
Yep.
Goes with that.
Definitely.
Very cool. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I want to load Steam and I want to play some games. Hopefully Ven doesn't listen to this. I despise keyboard and mouse gameplay. I really do.
Well,
it really, my, you know, minutes into it, my wrists are killing me. I don't do this kind of stuff normally. I usually touch a mouse for a couple seconds, and then I touch the keyboard for minutes, and then I touch the mouse for a couple seconds. Gaming is, you're doing both nonstop, and it isn't in my DNA.
I liken that to driving automatic versus driving stick. Mm. Driving automatic, a lot of more people do it, and it's way easier right off the bat. But once you learn to drive a stick and you understand the benefits from it and the much more control you have over the machine, you can't go back. And just like doing the mouse and keyboard gaming. And it's night and day once you get used to it.
Gotcha. Yeah, and see, I have a stick shift. The only downfall is it's hard to eat bacon as I drive.
Yeah, well, you just get first you gotta get the bacon in the can, get a couple rubber bands, you know, strap it around your head, and just make a little bacon, like an oat bag for a horse. Yes. We'll call it Doors Bacon apparatus.
Right, and then if I get a call while I'm driving, I'll just sound like this the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just a quick venting session. I really wanted to scream at more than a couple people in my family in the last couple weeks.
Uh-oh.
Because, you know, they have the nerve, the audacity to ask me what I want for Christmas.
Bacon.
Okay, if you don't want to hear my answer, then don't ask me the question. Well, yes and no. I asked for a Bacon of the Month membership.
Wouldn't you? That sounds amazing.
Well, man, I got so much hell from it. I was like, you know... Don't ask me then. Don't ask me, because that's what I want. And speaking of bacon, because I brought it up, I couldn't get my wife to understand this. Tell me if this makes sense to you, okay?
Okay.
I love bacon. Mm-hmm. I do. I love it. We have a pack of bacon up in the fridge. That pack has been there for over a month. And she says, well, if you love it so much, why aren't you making it? And I try to explain to her, look, okay, I love bacon so much. In a time of crisis, in a time of need, if something bad happens at work, or my oldest son punches a girl in the face, or my wife kicks me in between my legs, or something really bad happens to me, I have the security sitting right above my head right now of a pack of bacon in the fridge. If something horrible happens, I can go upstairs, rip that thing open, throw it in the pan, and I have bacon. It's not something I want to squander. I like having that security blanket upstairs in that fridge.
I completely understand that. I completely understand it. And I've tried to explain it to my wife. I do the same thing with good cheeses. She's like, why aren't you using this cheese? Why aren't we using it for tacos? It's like, first of all, this isn't going anywhere near a grater. Okay. No way. This isn't going to be turned into little strips to be sprinkled over some ground beef. No, this is going to be savored. Because I love cheese. And but more importantly, your wife should be praising your self-control for not eating it raw on the way home from the bag in the car.
Nope.
That's my opinion.
I know. I don't get it. I told my wife, I said, look, I love you, but something tells me if I was gay, not that there's anything wrong with that, if I was gay and if I had my gay mate, he would understand it.
Yep.
Just, but I digress.
Just some guy thinks.
Stop talking about bacon. I'm getting depressed. I need to go get a baconator.
Bacon rant done.
Okay. 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 This next thing, I felt like I had to bring it up, and I am ashamed that I did not bring it up earlier. Okay. Lennox.com. Lennox.com is doing a membership drive. Okay. And people have to understand this is really a good thing. Okay. The Lennox Foundation itself, these are the people that pay Linus Torvalds' bill. These are the guys doing the support of the entire back end system, function, conferences, everything about Lennox, the kernel itself. Okay. They're doing a membership drive where anyone who joins will be in a drawing to win a $75 gift card to the Lennox.com store. That's not the real kicker, okay? Anybody planning on buying a Dell computer, an HP computer, a Lenovo computer, or a O'Reilly book or ebook, you need to get yourself a membership to the Lennox Foundation because it comes with 35% discount, up to 35% off the Dell computer or a Lenovo computer.
What?
Just for joining, yes. And I heard about this, honestly, like 2 weeks ago, and I cannot believe I forgot to mention it. This right here, you joined the Lennox Foundation, your savings right there, you can make up.
Well,
that's all it is.
Well, let me read this correctly, because it says specifically in this article, members receive exclusive benefits such as a Lennox.com email address, discounted pricing from Dell, HP, and Lenovo, comma, 35% discounts on O'Reilly books and ebooks, among more.
Yeah, there are discounts for the HP Dell stuff, and I think it is different model by model.
Right.
But I know the one I looked at, I saw that I talked to a guy about, it had to be 30% off because it was like a $1,300 laptop for just about $1,000. It was hundreds off.
That's nice. Yeah, I got to tell you, with HP being so close to me, I own some HP products. They're okay. They've had their problems in the past. Okay. Dell, I don't know, whatever. Lenovo, I love Lenovo stuff.
Yeah.
Just bought my wife a Lenovo laptop. Thing is rock solid. Love their products. And I mean, it's a win-win here. And the membership is only, am I reading this right? $99?
$99 for normal people. $25 if you are a student.
And is this a year or is this a lifetime?
99% is just 1 year. So every year you basically have to re-up. And I'm sure either sometime this year or early next year, they're going to have more drives where you can win stuff and get things.
Well, now I know what to ask for Christmas.
I know. I tried to. And
well, what you should have done is you should have said this first and then like, oh my God, you're such a geek. And like, okay, just get me a bacon of the month subscription. True. We'll call it good. And they'll be like, yeah, fine, whatever.
Oh, man, I found out about this stuff in the wrong order. That fate, I blame fate.
Yeah, well.
It was against me.
Still, this looks very, very cool.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about what I'm saying, you can, about the gift card, if you go to store.lennox.com, you can see all of the merchandise you can get. A lot of it is IC t-shirts and stuff. Like there's a t-shirt that says fork you, because you know, it's all about forking projects, forking code, so that's good.
This is very cool. And yeah, man, especially to have that Linux.com email address, that's just geek cred in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they have mugs. I like mugs, even though I don't drink coffee. I like having mugs.
Why don't you drink coffee? That's probably a whole other podcast, huh?
I don't know. I just think it tastes horrible.
Dude,
I know. Shame on me.
I'm saying at the latest January 2014, we're going to have a coffee cast.
And have a coffee cast.
At least a six episode series. That's it.
Only if I can call it caffeine.
Sure.
Because my mom's from South Bronx.
Yeah.
It's been in my head ever since.
There you go. Works for me.
Very cool.
Love coffee.
Oh, and I just noticed it looks like this is that almost. I got as a gift, I think. It might have been from Chuck Green, maybe. They have something that looks just like this, where you yank his head off, and it's a USB drive.
That was from Bill Wilson on OLF.
Bill, you're right, Red.
But do you know the cool thing about that, though? You see the other thing hanging off the chain of the head? Yeah.
I can shove it down in his cavity,
yeah,
so I don't lose his body cavity when I'm using
it. And this is pure gold for the audio show, because you guys can totally not see this.
I know.
That's
basically
okay.
It's a little penguin. You decapitate the little penguin, and what would be his spine connected to his head is actually a USB.
Yep. You do a Sub-Zero style fatality for Mortal Kombat on the little miniature penguin. No dangling, bleeding spinal cord USB. And I have one myself. Thank you, Bill, for giving those as gifts at OLF. Yeah, and I've used it, and it's great. It's cute little. It's not like a traditional little penguin. It's a cute little like comic penguin, and it's a great USB drive. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
I'll just say, finish him.
That's right.
Sorry, couldn't help it. Okay, a couple weeks ago, I mentioned the Peng Pod, but I kept calling it the Peng Pad. Linux tablet, boom, 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 boom. We've been hearing this nonstop, okay? Well, they made their funding, and supposedly it is going to be a real product. Well, A, we got to wait and see, but they say it's going to be real, whatever. There's another one, and it's from a company. I believe the company name is called Wishtel. Okay, this is a Mubai, I can't even say it right, Mubai-based company. Mumbai, I think it's how it's pronounced. It's a country over there.
Mumbai, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. This is going to be what they say, a quote-unquote $50 Linux tablet with a customized PrithV interface. PrithV, I gather, is like a customized IDE or something to play around with on the Linux desktop. It's kind of unclear.
Weird. But yeah, $50. Wow.
That's what they say. Now, they're going to have a tablet, they say, for $50 and a netbook for $120. I am kind of interested in that netbook only because of its price. Because with $50, I don't expect much. But $120 is hovering around that price where it could be something usable, could be something competent, could be something fun to play with.
Mm-hmm.
The $50 tablet might be too slow to actually function, but might be a terrific throwaway device. Because I was thinking, I had to be you, Cody. Okay, I never talked to any of my children as if they were babies. Okay, I never walked up to them, "How you doing?" I never did that. Okay. I, in fact, don't treat my children like children. I talk to my children as if they are adults. I try not to use words they don't understand, but I try to talk to them, treat them, and expect them to act as adults. Ironically enough, they kind of act good.
Right.
My logic is I would rather get my son, either one, this $50 Lenox tablet than some kiddie customized modified Android tablet for three times the price that limits what they can do on it.
Yep. Yeah,
and I believe it was you that said it before, right?
Yeah, well over a month ago, I was asking kind of if you have children, what kind of technology are you having them use? Please send in. I got some great response from you guys, and thank you again for it. Because much like what Dor's speaking about right now, yeah, you have all these kid tablets on the market, even kid Android tablets. And you're thinking, well, that can't be too bad. But then you look at them. And they're, you know, kind of goofy looking rubberized cases. You're thinking, well, it's going to a child. Sure, that's fine. But they're like $200. And then they have their own spin on Android, you know, and then their own marketplace. And then you have to buy their apps. So it's just like buying any other proprietary piece of hardware with proprietary mm-hmm. software. You're locked in. And I got in a discussion with a mother recently, and she said, well, if I'm spending all this and I'm spending all the money on the apps, why wouldn't I just get one of these Nexus 7s? And I said, that's what I've been telling you. And then she just bought it. So
yeah. Well, and here's my super ultimate logical conclusion. If I give my kid one of those pretend tablets, dare I say they can treat it a little junky and it will last. I don't want to condition my kid that it's okay to be incompetent with stuff.
Right.
I want them to understand they have to take care of stuff. You know, I don't want to put my kid in a car in a place where he can learn to drive and hit everything he wants and there's no consequences.
Exactly.
Oh, no. I'm going to a parking lot where I know the people who own the car and I'm going to let him drive around there. So if he hits one of them, guess what? Park the car. We're going to go up and tell Bobby hit his car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to precondition my kid to be a slacker. That's what it comes down to. And if somebody takes really offense to that, I'm sorry.
Well, it's that's one valid argument for it, but also you're not teaching him respect for the device. Mm-hmm. If you're letting him throw it around, I mean, small children, they're probably gonna do that anyway. But the other argument that I made to that would be, why limit the child? Give him something that is beyond his level of comprehension, yet still digestible in steps, and let him work up toward it. So if you're looking at getting a device for your child, and a lot of you guys shared this view with me and told me your success stories with it. I can't remember who it was. It was one of our listeners basically put his old Samsung G-Tab in an OtterBox case and handed it to his like 5-year-old, and now she uses yep. that as her tablet. So yeah, you can buy cases, you can buy protective hardware for these things, but I would rather give my kid, you know, the full experience rather than a hindered experience.
Yeah.
That's just me.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree. Okay, we are running a little bit long, so I want to shoot through a couple of these. I don't know if I've ever brought up a link from Engadget before. Don't get used to it, because something tells me this ain't going to happen again for a little while, people, okay?
Okay.
They did what I thought a pretty good, competent, a little limited posting, and it's called How to Picking a Desktop Environment in Linux. Now, they don't go over them all because it's kind of insane to go over them all. But it would have been really nice for them to go over a lot of them. They went over KDE, GNOME, I believe it was Unity, and XFCE. And they actually went into a decent amount of depth on each one. Good screenshots. And to be honest, they stated facts in comprehensible ways for people who aren't hardcore Linux users. And I knew it was going to be hard for me to describe that, but that's what they did.
Well, no, that's a very good description of it. And for people who've been thinking about switching or who might be already tech fans, chances are they're reading Engadget anyway. So I like to see sort of mainstream quote unquote sites like this provide these kind of articles, because I've seen this happen before where the article is way off base. It's filled with inconsistencies and errors and just blatant ignorance. But looking at this, I mean, it's a pretty decent albeit basic level breakdown, which someone who doesn't know anything about this absolutely needs. So I commend them for this article.
Yeah. And I like the fact that they basically go through the good and the bad for each one, but they also, in the very beginning, tell you a desktop environment is not just a desktop environment. It also entails typically a default web browser and a default file manager and a window manager, which they don't really go into an explanation of a window, what a window manager is, because the line is so blurred from a new user between a desktop environment and window manager. To separate the two when you're talking to these people, I think is a waste of time.
Yeah, because it can be confusing, especially in the onset when you're just starting to kind of dip your toe into the Linux pool, as it were. To see them make it easily digestible like this, I really do like it.
Yeah, very cool stuff. This next one was a link to H-Online. Come to think of it, I have no idea what H-Online actually stands for, but it stands for something. I just don't know what it is. There's a link that doesn't appear to be working in my browser. I'm thinking I'm just going to blast this OS away in the next 24 hours and just start over. Because I do think, like that Google sign out thing, something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, on this, I can tell you from memory what I remember about this. This is basically talking about a news summary of some of the latest software type things. And one of the things in the list is E17. E17 has the potential to be the best, now I don't like saying best, the best all-around desktop environment on Linux. It has the speed behind it. It has the prettiness behind it. It has the customization that goes with it. It has, honestly, a lot of users, and it's not even in version 1 yet, okay? I will say they plan to release version 1 on December 21st, 2012.
Okay.
Which just means they have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
But there was something else on that site. Oh, there you go. Finally loaded. The other thing I want to mention, a great example of it, okay, desktop environments can be for anyone, but also the one right beneath it is BioLinux 7. BioLinux 7, this is something I never heard of. This is an extremely customized niche distribution to what we were talking about earlier. This is developed by NERC Environmental Bioinformatics Center. BioLinux is a Ubuntu-based distribution for bioinformatics.
Very good.
I think it's pronounced. It's aimed at scientists who need to handle analysis with biological data. There will never be a version of Windows and Mac geared towards the analysis of biological data. Without right. Linux, do you guys out there understand how much legwork companies, institutions, organizations, and colleges would have to do to take a new computer and customize it to meet their department's needs? It would be insane. Yep. With niche distributions, it makes it very possible, doable, make sensible, affordable, all that. Able stuff.
Navigatable,
comprehensible. Okay, I just wanted to mention that real quick. And the H-Online, I encourage people to go check it out. They do have good stuff there. I just seems like I don't reference them too often.
I've never been to this site before. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
One guy who has a very bad attitude is a heavy poster on that site, but I'll say he posts some good stuff. And I'm going to leave him nameless. You guys know out there who know who he is, know who he is. Okay. Jala, this next one is over at computing.co.uk. Jala is a company. Janva finally unveils Sailfish. Sailfish is a Linux-based rival to Android, iOS, and Windows Phone. This is a true Linux mobile operating system. For people who scream Android isn't Linux, even though technically it is Linux, it's all on a Davlik, aka Java-like stack. Sailfish is much, much more pure Linux. And they basically unveiled a, I want to say prototype, with this operating system on it. So it looks like this is going to be a real product. I'll say more than likely probably won't be in the US first. Either be in South America or China or the UK, I don't know. But more than likely, I'm going to say not in the U.S. first.
Yeah, I've heard of Sailfish recently. And I got to say, I'm disappointed in this article because there are no screenshots. I don't know. I doubt they had access to them. Otherwise, why wouldn't they include them? But man, yeah. And you know what? Competition breeds innovation. If something like this becomes big or at least brings something better to the rest of them, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I will say, I believe it was on YouTube, I was able to do a search for Sailfish OS, and I was able to see a video of it. I don't know how old the video was, I'll just say that. It might have been a year old video, but it looked usable, functional, snappy, good interface. Definitely looked more simpler, not as polished as the Android, but I don't care, like you said, competition, man. Listen, it might make Steve Trevino really mad. And Ellis Owens really mad. But if a Sailfish or a Firefox phone comes out on the market, I might buy one of them. And then I don't really have a use of being on Android App Addicts or Droid Nation if I do that. So they might get really mad at me.
Well, but you'll still have your Nexus 7.
True. Thank you. Saving grace. Okay. Boom. Now I feel better.
You're welcome.
Okay, this next one, I'm really mad, I'm going to say. I'm really physically upset that I did not know about this application quicker, sooner, before. Okay, I know someone had to have mentioned to me, but I'd never heard of it, okay? Or I never picked up on it. Over at LinuxInsider.com, there's a posting, K My Money is as simple to use as Quicken. I don't know if that's a backhanded comment, because Quicken to me doesn't seem really easy to use. It's simple to use once somebody sets it up for you.
Right.
But it's definitely not truly simple, I'll say. But K My Money is the wedge in my eyes, because I was telling people before you could use GNU Cash. GNU Cash is much more of a bare bones stripped down. You need to do a good amount of work to get it to where you could record all your finances in it. Mm-hmm. This to me looks like something much more capable for a normaler user to get up and running quick out of the box.
And I gotta say, yes, I mean, this definitely fills a need, just like some other pieces of software we talked about earlier. It fills that need. It's that one other check thing you can check off your list, saying, I can do this in Linux and I can do it well. But if you don't use any sort of money management software for your own personal budget or for your business budget or for whatever financial needs you have, try a few of them, because you'll be amazed. Like, I have a custom spreadsheet that I made for my family's finances, and to think of how I used to pay my bills, like, I shudder to think about how I used to think about setting aside money every week for bills, but now it's all laid out for me, and it's essentially automated the way I have it now. But at least do yourself the service, try a few of these out, and because once you get a hold of your personal finances and get them in control, your whole life changes. A lot of worry is just gone. So I would urge someone to try this, and I'll even give it a try too and see if it's better than what I'm using now. If it is, I'll switch.
Dude, I'll PayPal you money to try this, because this to me looks like the tool we should be telling a lot of people about, like my wife, God bless her, I love her. But because I can't keep track of the money. If I do, we'd be living on the street in a couple weeks. But if possible, I'd really like to make her job easier. And this to me looks like it could be a fantastic launching off point. Or am I a complete idiot? I don't know.
No, I mean, it's just another alternative. And that's what, you know, we advocate every day. you gotta know your alternatives, much like what you're talking about Sailfish. Don't poo-poo on Sailfish. Don't poo-poo on something like this, because Linux is an alternative to the mainstream, so you need to at least know what else is out there. So give it a try. I'll commit to giving this a try after the first of the year. Right now, my plate is so full, I can barely do anything. My office is a complete disaster right now. I'm waiting until January 15th, and then I'm good. But yeah, I'll definitely hit this up first of the year and get back to you guys and let you know what I thought.
Very cool. Super quick, I just wanted to mention Peppermint OS. I'm asking people to not forget about Peppermint OS. They did just have, I believe, a new release in the last couple weeks. If you need a fast operating system, because like you have a netbook or you have just older hardware or you just don't have a lot of RAM kind of thing, I really encourage people to check out Peppermint OS. It's really nice. It's really smooth. There's not a lot of things to talk about. It just works. I personally really should be using this once in a while when I don't have a good amount of RAM, like in a box. And I think I should. I think I'm just going to shut my mouth and I'm going to start to install this more often. I like it. You know?
I really do too. I haven't installed a version of it, I think, since it actually went into full releases. I remember installing a beta of it over a year ago when I got a hold of, what was it? It was an old Sony Vaio laptop. And then an older Lenovo. I was just trying lightweight distros to see what suited my needs better. And between like a version of Lubuntu, and I tried Bodhi Linux and Peppermint. Peppermint is great because, like you said, Dora, it's very lightweight, very snappy, but it also has quite a bit of polish to it. It's not something, because traditionally when I think of lightweight distros, I think of something kind of like what we were talking about a couple weeks ago with XFCE, where it might look, the interface might look a little older, you know, because to make it lightweight, you know, you're using less graphics, you're using less, you know, you're using less processing power to have the OS up and running all the time. Whereas this doesn't sacrifice looks for functionality. It's very, very beautiful. If you guys haven't tried it before, definitely boot it up in a VM or any other sort of live environment if you can, to give it a spin. Because if you have some older hardware or just looking for something super lightweight to get stuff done, yeah, this is a great, great alternative to like some of the bigger name distros out there for sure.
Yeah. And not that there's anything wrong with Bodhi, I think. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That one comes by default with E17. I encourage people to play with both of them. Mm-hmm. Just make sure you use the right tools and the right jobs. Make sure if you need a lighter OS, don't suffer through a heavy desktop if you don't have to. Go with something light.
I was initially drawn to Bodhi Linux because that's the that's Patrick Swayze's character's name in Point Break. And I thought, okay, that's... because Point Break, 100% pure adrenaline, one of my favorite films of all time. I was like, I got to try this distro. And I was very pleased. Bodhi also as well. But we brought up Peppermint OS. So you give them both a try. Try Peppermint OS first, because we'll go reverse alphabetical on this one.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Very cool. This next one to bring up was on Linux.com, like we mentioned earlier. Okay. This is a little story on Linux.com. So it's called The People Who Support Linux. Brazilian developer hacks healthcare with BeagleBoard and Android. Okay, first off, people, the word hack does not mean something bad. So please, if you're going to keep listening to this cast, hack typically means something very good, very smart, and very functional. Okay. Basically, it's a little story about a Brazilian developer who couldn't imagine building open source software, free software, with healthcare in mind, because everything is so heavily locked down in the healthcare system as far as privacy rights go and as far as intellectual property, trade secrets go. It's all completely locked down. And basically, this guy 6 months ago co-founded Atto Systems, ATTO, systems engineering in Brazil with the aim of making better medical devices using Android and Beagle boards to do a lot of the backbone. And he's using open source software on top of it for solutions. I just think this is cool.
Yeah. Well, no, I couldn't agree more. When you see people using, well, especially sort of injecting open source into very, very key systems like healthcare systems like this, to basically prove, you know, this can work, this will save us money and it's functional, let's try it. And yeah, I commend him for his work on this.
Very cool, very cool. Okay. Two more things I want to throw out there. Next thing, I don't want to even tell anybody where this is at. Okay. This is the perfect example of somebody extremely desperate for clicks. Okay. That's all this is. And I don't even want to say who the guy is who posted this. Okay. Here's the gist of it. Someone thought they could game social networks and game a whole bunch of clicks by asking, in my eyes, one of the stupidest questions I think I've ever heard. It is on the same par as me saying to Cody, "Cody, tomorrow if you woke up and your wife had a penis, would you still love her?" You shouldn't even begin to answer that question because it's not going to happen. Okay?
Right.
It's a total irrelevant question. Someone asking you that question is merely trying to get you fired up or trying to argue with you. Okay?
Yeah, I agree.
That's it. So this jerky, he posted this. "What if Linux went closed source tomorrow? Would you still use it?" Well, that's totally null and void question, because if it quote unquote did, there would be a lot of court dates coming right after that, because it's incapable of going closed tomorrow without probably 30,000 hours of work getting everyone who has ever donated any code to it to sign off on it becoming closed source. So if you want to get people's attention and if you want to stir up conversations, ask good, relevant questions. Ask good ones. "What's your favorite desktop environment and why? Here's mine and here's why." You know, to ask this question, I honestly say I felt like it completely, utterly lowered the standard of content in the free software and Linux world. It completely lowered the bar. And it, to be honest, made me sick because it was such a hollow, pointless question. And I've heard more than a couple of people talk about it.
Because I saw this on Google Plus earlier this week, and it is one of those things that's going to either incite rage or just start arguments, because you're never going to get like a one word answer. Maybe. I mean, for most people, I would guess, because I would have to really think about it and then answer it. But it's just like you said, it's like, why even entertain the possibility?
And it doesn't matter what you answer. He or anyone else can always attack you because of your answer with saying either,
"Yep.
Well, then you don't like free software."
Right.
Or, well, then you're just using it because you're cheap. Or, you know, they'll always come back with an attack question. That's why I don't answer this kind of question. It's pointless. Utterly pointless. What if tomorrow bacon was healthy for you? Would you eat more? It doesn't matter. I love bacon.
Yep.
You know? So I just had to just mention that really quick, just to get it off my chest. If you guys want to know more about it, if you want to comment on it, if you want to read more about it, if you want to follow the guy that does it, just Google search, "What if Linux went closed source, would you still use it?" And you'll find it. And have fun, you know. Loves his scarves.
Okay. Very interesting.
Okay. Now, from something completely stupid, ignorant and mundane, we go to something cool, because that's the way I like to roll. I like to end on higher notes. Hacker Public Radio. I've mentioned them more than a couple of times in the past. When this show's published, we're going to play a quick promo after we're done talking about it here. Okay.
Okay.
Basically, Hacker Public Radio last year did a 12-hour podcast. It started 12 hours after the official Dateline date switched over.
Right.
And it went till that turned to midnight. This year, they're doing a 24-hour podcast.
Oh.
As soon as the international Dateline clicks over to 12:01 a.m., they're starting a podcast, and they're going to do it for 24 hours. Hmm. Disclaimer, it might not be all family-friendly. In fact, I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty safe to say some of it will not be family-friendly. But I'll also say, I guarantee you there's going to be more than a couple really in-depth, insightful topics talked about with people giving opinions that you yourself might not have thought of. And for the most part, everybody who gets involved with this is just a nice guy. Bing, right there. I just said it, okay? If you yourself would like to get involved with it or listen to it live, all you got to do is go over to hackerpublicradio.org. Right now on the very top of their homepage, they have the information for it, telling you about the New Year's Eve show, how to connect to it. They're using mumble.openspeak.cc. If anyone ever joined Linux Basics in the past, that's the same Mumble server. Last year, I think we had 35 or so people on it. I encourage people, try to break it. Try to bring it down. Go connect and talk. Good stuff.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't checked out HPR before, great content coming out from them and from their contributors. Everything from just basic how I got started in Linux to hardware hacking. There was a great Richard Stallman interview recently, which we talked about on a previous episode. Pod Brewers is actually syndicated on there now. It's a fantastic project. And to have, I think, a 24-hour block of content coming right at the new year, I mean, you're bound to have some fantastic, insightful stuff. So definitely check it out if you can.
Yeah, and I'll say last year, amongst other things, they had the main developer of Crunchbang on. Really nice guy. I believe his wife was also on at the same time. A lot of fun. And they also had Thistleweb, a Scottish guy. The more drunk he got, the stronger his accent got. And it did get a little bit hard for me as an American to understand everything he was saying. But let me tell you something. He was passionate.
Very cool.
Very passionate. Okay. We're going to put in a clip from them promoting it.
Fantastic.
Well, and I wanted to just take a quick moment to say, I still haven't got an email from Kevin O'Brien at Ohio Linux Fest telling us to stop announcing the OLF volunteer coordinator.
Neither have I.
Position. So I don't, hello. 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 Somebody out there has to be willing, has to have time to help out with this. And I really encourage, again, this is like the fourth week in a row, somebody please volunteer to assist with OLF. I'll tell you right now, Kevin ain't going to tell you. There's a little bit of fringe benefit that comes along with this. It's not like he uses you like a wet rag and throws you away, okay? They are thankful for it. And I'm sure you're going to see something out of it.
Mm-hmm. And I want to apologize because I forgot to mention it last week and I thought about it immediately when the show ended. But Kevin has written into us. Basically, they're looking for an individual to help coordinate the volunteers. And what that basically would entail would be to, you will be assisted through some of the other OLF staff. So don't feel afraid to take on this responsibility if you've never been to the fest before or have never been to the convention center before. Basically, they're trying to look for someone to sort of gather the troops, as it were, and make sure that everyone that is volunteering is put in the right spot. because they'll have people that be needed to watch doors, to watch tables, to take registration, a variety of things. So if you are good at organization, please contact Kevin at news@ohiolinux.org. And a previous statement I made is still true. And a couple of you have already responded. I can't remember your names right now, but I have gotten back to both of you. Haven't done it in a couple of weeks. I will soon. But if you are planning on going to OLF, and if you would like to be part of a small team of people that would help coordinate, that way all the responsibility isn't on one person, definitely contact me on Google+, just Cody Cooper, CodyCooper, because I've told Kevin that I would be interested in it. But based on my experience at OLF last year, I don't know how much time I would have to devote 100% to it. And I'm just being honest there. So if you're interested in it, contact me. And if we can get a small team of Podnutsians to get together and say, Kevin, we got it handled, I think that would be great. So check it out. Okay. Dor, are you still there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, cool. All right. So we're going to go ahead and get into emails.
Cool.
And speaking of emails, I'm going to skip down to the bottom one here. Speak of the devil, Kevin O'Brien from the Ohio Linux Fest, who we just spoke about, wrote in last week. And Kevin wrote in saying, great episode of Linux, the rest of us guys. My first distro was Mandrake. Yes, Mandrake. And I often say that is why I have stuck to KDE ever since. When I tried Kubuntu and Mandriva seemed to be circling the drain, I jumped to that side and stayed there for a few years. I still have a couple of Kubuntu machines, but I have recently, but I have since added one with Fedora 17 KDE and OpenSUSE 12.2 also KDE. After listening to Tracy, I think I need to try Magia next. Thanks for the tip, Kevin. Well, very Kevin, cool. I'm glad you enjoyed the last episode. With the very limited amount of KDE experience I've had, I could say I felt very comfortable in Magia. I haven't tried KDE on, I haven't tried Kubuntu, and I haven't tried using KDE in any of the other sort of big name distros. When I tried OpenSUSE and Fedora, I just used GNOME 3 because it was within the past 6-8 months. So, thank you very much for that. I appreciate the tip. All right, and we have one other email we'll read this week. It is from Nige Verity. Writes in. He says, hey guys, I was interested in your discussion of XFCE. If you stick with the default themes, I would agree that it does not have a very inspiring appearance. Windows 95 just about sums it up. However, if you use the full XFCE environment rather than just the constrained options provided by the likes of Ubuntu, you can greatly improve the look of your desktop by playing around with combinations of Windows styles and desktop themes. If you're prepared to modify the theme config files manually, you can make even more improvements. I discovered XFCE early in my Linux experience because of my computer at the time only had 256 megs of RAM. GNOME 2 worked okay, but I looked around for a lighter desktop in the hopes of finding something faster. There ought to be a big take-up of XFCE by people who are disenchanted with GNOME 3 and Unity. The screenshots on the XFCE website, unfortunately, really don't show the desktop off to be the best advantage, so I'm not surprised that the common perception is that it looks old-fashioned. For anybody wanting to see what it can really look like, xfce-look.org is a great place to go and download additional themes. Cheers, Nige. Thank you, Nige. And I know that there's also like the gnome-look.org, so I'm sure that this is a like project. And I will definitely check this out later. Because, I read that before once, how if you use sort of a distribution that uses XFCE natively, well, like a spinoff, much like Ubuntu would be for XFCE or Kubuntu. It's not the true raw power of that desktop environment. Right. So yeah, I will definitely check this out because I love it how simple it is. It's not difficult whatsoever. It runs great, but much like what I was talking about earlier with Peppermint OS. If you could make it just a little bit easier on the eyes, I don't personally need it, but if you're pitching it to people as a proper Linux desktop environment who maybe need that glitz and glamour, who are used to that kind of, the shininess, then I think that would be a great thing to experiment with just to make it a little more presentable for someone you might be getting to try to switch.
Right. Yeah, I'll say if you go to xfce-look.org, click themes on the left side, and then click highest rated, I believe it said. That's where you get the ones that most people seem to like. Dude, the first couple of them look really good, and I will say they're based off of GTK2, i.e. GNOME 2. So, it's, you know, it looks not like what I think of as XFCE.
No, not at all, man. Yeah, I'm looking at the one called Orta.
Yep.
And yeah, wow. That is night and day. So to think that having this sort of graphical beauty matched with the speed of XFCE, I think, oh man, yeah, that's a win-win right there.
Yeah, I wish I would have known about this before.
Well, it's never too late. You can always blow a system away and start over within...
Who, me?
Well, I would say start over within an hour unless you're trying to upgrade from Linux Mint 13 to 14.
Well, true. Oh, yeah, yeah. And if it wasn't clear to people, Martin took a completely fresh install and tried to upgrade it using those steps, and it failed.
Right.
So I don't suggest anybody do it unless you're the kind of guy who hops on a motorcycle and tries to make it over a canyon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and thank you again, Martin. That was something that we referenced on last week's episode.
Yeah,
yeah, he definitely did his homework and made it very easily digestible. Hopefully, I relayed that in the email when I read it. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, please listen to the last show. All right. Well, Dor, that's all I had for emails.
Okay. I think we did have voicemails, but we didn't have time to set up the system, and it is completely my fault. If you people out there want to call me names, simply call 707-6-PODNUT, and we'll hear you complain next week.
If we have the voicemails set up. But chances are we'll be playing the backlog of voicemails, so you probably won't hear those until 2013.
Oh, Lord.
And then, speaking of that, are we going to do a show next week? Isn't next Tuesday Christmas? Am I wrong?
Well, if it is, then we're not.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to reschedule, because we can't go 2 weeks straight without one. Because if that is Christmas, then the following week is New Year's Day.
Right.
So we got to figure out when we could do one.
So we will commit to pushing out another one, hopefully before the end of the year. But we may not be able to. We definitely won't be able to do it on our normal time. But regardless, we're not going to rest on our laurels. There will be plenty of news between now and then. So we'll be pushing out content just like we always do.
Yeah, I clearly had too much content for this week. And to be honest, people, I bumped a whole bunch of content.
I never feel overwhelmed with stuff by you, Dor. You bring great stuff. And if anybody is really complaining about the length of the show, simply pause it halfway through, wait a week, and then hit play again.
Right, or just speed it up to where I sound like a chipmunk.
Dude, no, yeah. Yeah, man, yeah, Dog Catcher plus the Presto library. 1.5 times speed, 2 hours will go by in 1 hour and 20 minutes, if I did my math correctly, which I haven't been doing lately, so maybe that's wrong. But regardless, yes. I'm telling you, these germs are doing things to my brain.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that speeding up. I can't listen to most shows live because it sounds like they're on Dramamine or something.
Right.
Or like
talking
slow.
Yep. Very cool, Dor. So where can we find you?
Easiest, quickest, simplest, DoorDoorGeek.com. The most active place I am at right there. There's a link to my Google Plus profile. We do have a PodNuts community now. I'm not sure what we're going to do. I did Google Plus and tweet 3 things today on Tuesday the 18th. I also did 3 posting in the PodNuts forums that they link to. We're asking for assistance with the PodNuts network, and what we're really asking for is with a planned possible 6.5 shows a week, it's going to end up probably being, because we're going to do 2 shows either bi-weekly or monthly. Basically, we PodNuts are asking for a little bit of assistance with gathering guests, getting guests. We're also asking for help with social stuff. I don't want to say social marketing because that makes me sound dirty, but it's social stuff we need help with. And we also are asking for help with some of the audio editing. And what I mean by that is with 6 shows, there is more than enough work to go around for more than a couple people to help with the audio editing of these podcasts.
Mm-hmm. And I am going to take over the editing of this show soon. I've been saying that for a while, but I need to delve into our doer a bit more, and then that'll be one less show on Steve's plate. So that will be happening soon, I promise. I haven't forgotten. So, but yeah, if you guys can provide any assistance, whether through the social network aspect of helping acquire guests, therefore helping acquire content to make the network better, or are good with any sort of other thing, whether it be audio editing or anything else you think that the network could contribute from, where should they contact us at, Dor?
Easiest place is podcast@lennoxfortherestofus.com, or just simply go to the Podnuts forums, PM me, do a forum posting. We are always looking for more help. And, you know, if you have a talent you think you have that could help us and you have a little bit of extra time, hit us off.
Very cool. You can contact Dor there. I'm Cody Cooper. Obviously, you can contact me at Cody Cooper on Google Plus. That's the easiest way to do it. I check my Google Plus several times a day. Feel free to hit me up there. As always, please check out the ACF.co. Our good friend Captain Jonathan T. Nato runs that organization, bringing accessibility to those people who need it. So many people are being left behind in the terms of technology. The ACF is a great organization that is gathering funds and trying to bring technology to those people who desperately need it, who are being left behind. For as little as $2 a month, you can contribute to help their cause. I'm a contributor. I feel great every single time I see that money come out of PayPal. You can too. Check them out. And finally, one last time, guys, please check out podnuts.com/Amazon for any of your Amazon shopping this holiday season and in the future. Very, very easy link to make. And then Podnuts gets a small commission from every sale. I'm going to thank you guys for listening to one more episode of Linux the Rest of Us. And as always, the sign off, Linux is not just for the rest of us, but it is for all of us. Good night.